It's time for another thrilling episode of Meet a Paper Cutter, where we go behind the scenes to meet paper cutters. Here's your host, Matt Lee.
Welcome back to Meet a Paper Cutter. I'm your host, Matt Lee, and today's guest is the reason that Papercut exists. Papercut has been in the making for over 20 years, and I'm lucky to be joined by the man who all those years ago came up with the idea to solve the challenges that printing presents. So sit back, grab a coffee, get comfy, and enjoy as I dive into all things Papercut and beyond with the CEO and co-founder of Papercut, Chris Dance. Cool. So welcome back to Meet a Paper Cutter. And this is a very exciting episode because I've managed to tie down CEO and co-founder of Papercut, Chris Dance, which is massively exciting. I think this is going to be the peak of the Meet a Paper Cutter series. So welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Yeah, but I'd just like to correct that because you said pin me down. But I think the last time you tried to do it, it was you failing to deliver.
All right. Don't let everybody know. But we are here in our Bracknell office, and I know you've been here before, so we won't talk about the office because everyone talks about that. But I think you might be able to tell a little story about a certain prank that we pulled on the regional director, Steve, when we opened the office.
Yes. I suppose we do like a good practical joke at Papercut, and it probably goes back a few years when we did an office move in Melbourne. The whole company decided to prank me. So before we did the move, I came in from lunch one day and found everyone had left the office. So they'd all moved out and I just came to an empty office. So it was very well staged. Technically, they didn't move to the new office ahead of time. That's what I thought had happened. They'd all nicked down the local pub and were live streaming my adventures around this office with no one in it on a large screen. So it was a brilliant joke. And ever since then, we've tried to play some practical jokes on our office moves. And we had an awesome one with Steve here in the UK. Yep. Which we'd arrange for a health and safety person to come in to do the final inspection from the council, and he confiscated the coffee machine, and it was hilarious.
I guess I did play a part in that, in finding us an actor to come in and be a health and safety person.
Now you've owned up to that. Maybe you might be a target of a payback at some time. You probably should have kept that one quiet.
I may well be. Hopefully Steve won't listen and then we'll be fine. So, So I think everyone probably knows you as the co-founder and CEO of Papercut, but just maybe for some context, maybe you can talk about how you spend your day-to-day at Papercut.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things in a founder-driven business over all those years. You know, you start off doing every single role. Back when it was yourself or just a few people, you had to do everything from, taking the bin out to doing support issues to writing code. And I've tried to keep that in my role the whole way along. I love being hands-on. I love being part of a team. And my day-to-day involves all manner of activities. It's sometimes jumping in to fight a fire. It's help out with a task that you enjoy doing. It's really, really doing everything. And obviously I spend a lot of time on the strategic side and relationship and big picture, probably more so than in the past. But yeah, I love getting my hands dirty.
Yeah, I'd like to stay in the code.
Yeah, and I make an effort every year to write, a few lines of code. It's nowhere near as much as it was in the early days, but, just little side projects that are not on the critical path or POC concept code. I love it. It's awesome.
Cool. So I'm going to go back to the beginning now in history. And as I mentioned, we're in the UK, but I know going right back in history, you actually spent some time in the UK and in particular Manchester.
Yeah. So not a lot of people know that actually Papercut was operationally ran out of the UK for 2 years. So if you go back in Papercut's history, I was a university student, and my part-time casual student job was being a network administrator at a local high school. And that's where the idea of Papercut came out. I was frustrated by just literally walking up to the printer and picking up a ream of uncollected print jobs and putting them in the bin every day. And it annoyed me so much that I went and created a program and code around it, and hence Papercut was born. And then the first couple of years, I'd went and pursued a career in first oil and gas, and then moved into IT, into software, which is where my passion was. And that adventure in software, working for a company, took me to the UK for 2 years. And outside hours in those first, 4 or 5 years, Papercut was an outside hours activity. And for those 2 years that I was in the UK, there was many lines of code, and I vividly remember adding the print log feature. And I wrote the first lines of that code on that on a train going between London and Manchester.
Cool. So when you first thought, when you saw all this paper building up on the printer, what was the first thing that the program did? Was it about logging jobs, or was it doing something else to start with?
Yeah, so the very first thing was putting a reasonable limit. Like, so what I thought was going to solve the problem at school, at the high school, was putting a quota or a reasonable limit on the students. You don't want to get in the way of them doing their work. They need to be able to print something off the internet, print out a paper that they're working on. So you can't get in the way of education, but you can stop abuse and you can make people think before they print. And so putting a reasonable limit on the students each term in those days, or quarter year, they would get an amount allocated to their account. And it just really radically changed the mindset. So that was the very first feature, was really basic print quota.
Yeah. And that was a university in the UK?
No, that was the very first customer was a high school that I was working through. And then the very first sale we had was actually a business in the UK. They were a real estate office, and they had a case where all their fancy colour printers were used more than printing the brochures for all the houses. It was used for wedding invitations and all sorts of things, and they needed to clamp down on that. So it was actually a commercial sale was the first ever.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. So that's one for me as well.
Yep.
So as I mentioned, I have drafted in a special guest. So if I can get you to pop your headphones on, we've got a question coming for him, and I'm hoping you'll recognise him. He does introduce himself anyway, but I will play that.
Hi, Chris. Doc Balgi from ACDI. Two-part question. I know it was 20 years ago, but what skill sets did you have when you first created Papercut? And did you ever think that the program you were writing would turn into what it is today, or were you just trying to solve a current problem?
All right, so great question. What skill set did I have? Well, believe it or not, I didn't study programming. I studied mechanical engineering, and I did a double degree, one in science and one in engineering, and my majors were physics and maths and mechanical engineering. So I did get an opportunity to do some programming during that course, but it was very basic, and so a lot of my skill set was self-taught. It was really probably having a vision of how to solve a problem and what the program should look like and the way it should work. And then I had to work out and develop the skills on how to actually work out how to make that vision. So that was really the skill set that I came in with. And as probably so primary, the passion, the biggest skill I think I had was passion for solving a problem. It really motivated me to get in there and do that.
And can you remember the first thing that you coded?
I think the very first thing was obviously intercepting a print job and working out how many pages were in it. And I thought, I can probably do a simple task like that in a couple of days. And it actually took 2 months. Hooking in those days, Windows NT server, and getting into that Principal or API was poorly documented, and I eventually worked that out. But the big hurdle was working out the number of pages in that print job actually required jumping in to understand what a print language was. What was PostScript? What was PCL? How do you get the page counts out of it? And I quickly worked out that I had to write a parser and a state machine and all these concepts that I had to learn about. So, it was a big uphill battle for those first couple of years.
And then I think, so Doc's second part of his question, did you ever think what you were writing was going to become what it is today?
I remember early on, It was, so the program was written and put in the school. And I thought, surely there's other schools that want to use this as well. So I made the decision. At those days, there was a concept called shareware, which is putting a bit of software out and seeing if, you know, people were willing to pay money for it. And I thought that might be somewhere to start. So I had a little bit of that mindset of putting it out and see if people would pay for it. And I remember sitting down and saying, is this going to be viable? Should I spend a little bit of advertising or the money to actually register a business? It was a big commitment in those days. And I did a back of an envelope calculation. I remember thinking, oh, there's so many schools, and I tried to roughly work out how many schools were in the world. And the numbers bamboozled me. And then I asked myself the question, should every school in the world be running this software? And I had to say yes. You know, they really should be. And then I thought, no, there definitely could be a company in that. Did I expect the business to be, you know, 200 plus people and thousands of people out there helping sell Papercut globally? No vision of that at all. But I definitely had that passion of getting that product into as many hands as possible.
And here we are, nearly probably 21 years later now.
Yeah, 21 years, and it has been an amazing journey, and what we've learned along the way as a company and the opportunities that we've all had through that journey has been absolutely awesome.
And is there one thing you could think of that if you could say to your former self back then that you would say now?
Yeah, there's probably a few things. I think what I would say, I think as we've grown over the years, we've had a lot of people come into the business and they bring these fantastic ideas. Many of those ideas were from corporate environments. And I think as the company has grown, we bought in some of those corporate aspects. Some of them have taken the business to new levels and new forward, but some of them actually remove some of our magic sauce or some of the things that make it great. And one thing I'd be saying to myself, which is something we hold very strongly in the business today, is, you know, Papercut was created to fundamentally solve a problem. And also when Matt and I went full-time and formed a company and bought our first employee, we said it was to create that work environment that we loved, that we wanted to turn up every day, because we didn't have that in our day jobs. And the one thing I'd be saying to myself is, you know, don't do anything to take that away. And I remind myself of that every day. And there's been various parts in our evolution where I wish I had myself tapping myself on the shoulder to remind me.
Yeah. So when you got back to Melbourne from the UK, and I believe then Matt joined the team.
Yeah.
Obviously, you weren't working in the office that you're working in now. So where did life start?
Yeah, so the first, you know, as I said, it was an outside hours adventure for a couple of years. And then when we decided to go full time, you know, money was very tight. We're very proud that we're 100% founder-owned, self-bootstrap business. One of the ways that we did that was we literally did operate, you know, the so-called tech company in the garage. You know, we weren't quite in the garage. We were in the back room, in the spare room. And we used to work alternating a month at my place and a month at Matt's place in the spare room. And we did that for almost 2 years. There's been many hours spent in spare rooms.
And then I believe there was a bit of a challenge when you took on the first employees and having enough seats.
Yeah, that's a bit of a folklore, and unfortunately it's true. So I remember we sent my dad out to find an office because we were busy. We had to answer phone calls during the day. So I co-opted my father on a day off to, can you go and scout and try and find an office? And he also brought a bit of science into that. And he said, oh, look, I've picked the location that's midpoint between your house and Matt's house, and that's where the office is going. And I found a great one. It's above a coffee shop in Mount Waverley. And and then we were ready to hire our first employee. So we'd literally been in the office for, I think, about 4 days, and we had arranged an interview for Tom, who's our first ever employee, and he's still in the business today, and he reminds me of this story. And he had to come in for an interview, and Matt and I looked at each other and we realised we only had 2 chairs in our office. So we quickly had to jump in the car an hour before the interview and go pick up a 3rd chair. So when Tom arrived for his interview, he actually had a chair to sit on.
Did he have to put it together first, though?
Yeah, fortunately, we're handy not only with code, but we could use an Allen key as well.
Cool, and I think that office above a coffee shop, that probably shaped a very important part of Papercut's culture in the coffee.
Yeah, I think, look, coffee you find everywhere. You'll find it all through our website, our documentation. Everyone who joins Papercut has changed as a coffee barista, and that all started from that first office. It was above a coffee shop, and Matt and I, at 10 o'clock, we had this rule that you had to complete all the support tickets that came in overnight before you could have that first coffee. That was the motivator. We had to relax that rule at one point because there's just too much support and we wanted coffee. But we used to walk down at 10 o'clock and get coffee. And Tom, he was a recent graduating student and was saving up as well. He didn't want to buy a coffee and he would make his own coffee. And it was awful. And Matt and I decided, oh, we've got to shout Tom a coffee. And we did that. And ever since then, we've had this amazing coffee culture.
And it was good coffee underneath the office.
Yes, it was good coffee.
Oh, good to hear it. So I think it's, we're probably just going back in time. You know, is there one, looking over the past 21 years, is there one highlight you could pick out that maybe you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, there's a few. I think one of the areas that I'm really proud of is some of the early sales we made in higher education. So we were well known in the K-12 education market. We were making, you know, inroads into smaller, medium sized businesses, and you know, going cross-platform, developing a Mac version and getting those first higher education sales were, you know, something I'm very proud of, because we had to put a lot of time into spending time with the customers, whether that be, you know, small universities and colleges to large ones. And one of our very early higher education sale was a very well-known large American university that starts with H. And very prestigious, and actually working with them and hearing that why they selected our product was because of the working culture with us and our focus on innovation, not how big we were as a company or our previous customer base, was a real highlight. Because you know, I believe in technology. It's, you shouldn't be evaluating technology of what it does today. It's what it's going to do in the future, because you invest in technology for not a point in time, but for a change in a business. And to have an organisation say that to us in our face, and such a big name, is something that I vividly remember. And yeah.
Cool. So venturing outside of Papercut, you mentioned your dad and him helping find the office. Was he an instrumental part of starting the business?
Yeah, I think you know, Dad played a role. As the first thing I'd say is he actually got me my first job as that network administrator. So he was a teacher at that school, and I think he put a good word in for me to get that part-time job as a student. So thank you, Dad, for getting me that job where I sort of developed that passion to write some code to fix the problem. And yeah, look, you know, I actually asked Dad to take early retirement for teaching and come in and help us grow the business in the early days. Yeah, and he definitely did play a key role. In fact, we had someone join the business who's a son of an existing employee, and they were telling me today or last week, they said, oh, I think I might be the first employee to, you know, to, as a sibling to come in. And I said, hey, don't take that title. I am. My dad worked in the business.
And what did, was he a coder as well? Or what?
Where no,
did
he... Dad. As he put it, he learnt programming in the days where there was punch cards and green screens. So, yeah, no, he was never a coder. Yeah, more on, you know, what I'd call the operational side of the business and helping out with a lot of licensing and sales.
Yeah. And does he still play a part now?
No, look, Dad's very much retired, but he does play a part because he makes an effort to turn up to you know, Christmas parties and events and you know, that's awesome to see.
Cool. So I think so now obviously you're married now, you have children. Something we talk about a lot at Papercut is getting that really good work-life balance. I guess over the years that's probably been a struggle as you were ramping up the company, but is that something you've now found a happy medium with?
Yeah, I think one of the things around work-life balance is a lot of it comes down to, often we find we need work-life balance because, you know, we have crap jobs. And that's the one thing I find about Papercut is it's not a crap job. It is awesome. It literally doesn't feel like you're working, because if you're super passionate about something, you would choose to do it by choice. And that runs through, you know, my household. Everyone in the family, is across what Papercut does and sees my passion and sees the enjoyment. So that's one of the aspects. As far as time at work, I do spend a lot of time at work and travelling. And one of the things I did to help get that work-life balance is I got a house really close to work. So I've got a 10-minute commute, which is awesome. So it means I can, nick home and make sure I maximise that time with the kids. But, you know, it is super important, because if you don't have that balance, then you don't have that passion. And without passion, you know, our culture wouldn't survive.
Do you think your kids are going to follow in your footsteps in a technical career? Have you seen them picking up tech and IT?
Yeah, definitely. I think both my son and daughter have shown passionate interest in technology. And they do point out to me that Papercut runs at their school, and and that's awesome to see. Whether they go into a tech career or into Papercut itself, who knows? The most important thing is they have passion for what they do.
Yeah. And I think, talking of passion, I know one of the things that you've been quite passionate about is Tesla. And you obviously now have a Tesla as part of your car fleet, and I say fleet.
I wish it was.
I know you now have a Tesla. What made you make that switch? What drew you to Tesla?
Yeah, I was reminded by one of our very early resellers. Here in the UK, he said, I vividly remember the first trip that I went to visit you in Australia, and you picked me up in this tiny little blue Astra and drove it around, and I knew there was a great company because there was a founder that was spending money in the right parts. So I do feel a bit guilty about driving an expensive car to some extent, but I am also super passionate about investing in the future, and of course there's a reason why it's called Papercut. We've got that nod to the environment. That was a whole that waste of paper was such a big motivator for me. So reduction of waste, the environmental message is really underpinned, and I do see that we need to innovate as a global society, and buying an electric car and investing in that future is something that excited me. So yeah, I do love my car, and do love investing in the future, whether it be solar or electric cars, etc.
Yeah, I think I was looking just the other day, I saw a video about the Tesla roof tile system.
Yep.
And I think technology's really coming on in that.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely, I've got, you know, solar panels at home, and I love writing code, right? So I wrote a little bit of code that monitors my solar panels, and when it's paying back into the grid, if the car's switched on, or car's plugged in, I should say, it will actually turn the car on rather than excess solar going in back into the grid. It pumps it into the car. I love technology and what it can do. There's some awesome stuff there.
Just makes you wonder what's coming in the future.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use the environmental piece to lead on to my next
good
thing. But I know you're quite passionate about sailing. Now, it's probably not for the environmental benefits, but maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I think if you go back, someone asked me what I was most proud of, and I said, look, you know, I think I definitely got to say the most thing I'm proud of is you know, creating a family with my wife. And, you know, that's to a large extent probably the obvious answer for most people. But and then someone said, oh, but surely the second thing is creating Papercut. And I said, no, actually, I suppose my sailing achievements rate second on the list, because that was always my childhood dream. So I come from a family of four generations of competitive dinghy sailor. And I was introduced at an age where I can't even remember when I went for my first sail. And, yeah, I love it as a sport. And it was super passionate. And in 2015, I achieved my life goal, which was to win a sailing world championship. And, yeah, that's that whole journey that sailing has taken me on over the years. It's taken me around the world. I think it helped build that global mindset around when Papercut was created. It was created, as I said, the first sale was to a business, but it was also to an overseas business outside Australia. And we've always had that global mindset, and a lot of that comes from the world of sailing and as a kid going to world championships and meeting people around the world. So I think it's just an awesome sport, and it helps me with my work-life balance.
And you've got your championship. Are you still sailing now?
Yeah, I, as my wife said, she says I've got to be very careful what I take on because I don't do these things in halves. So it doesn't matter if it's paper cut, I don't do that in a half, and sailing I don't do in halves as well. So she said my sailing goal needs to change because if I'm trying to win world championships, every spare second I got was training. And as an amateur, right, you've really only got the weekends and some evenings to go and practice. So it took up a lot of time. So the last couple of years, the last 18 months or so, has been really trying to get my kids into sailing. So that's where the passion, less about the competition and more about having fun and getting the kids into sailing.
And they're loving it?
Yes and no. So I hope to get one hit out of the two kids. It would be great to. There's a bit of pressure on me because I know my the kids' grandparents are very keen to see that fifth generation. So my daughter is reluctantly showing interest, which is good. Like, as in, she pretends not to like it, but she's very interested by it. So that's a good sign.
Awesome. So coming back into Papercut, I wanted to ask you about the company vision. So the vision to stand amongst the world's most admired and disruptive software companies. Can you talk a little bit about where that came from? When did that vision get introduced, and why was that the vision?
Yeah, so we've had some fantastic people join the company over the years, and when we brought someone in full time to help us with marketing and know how to do it, they said, look, we've got to sit down and develop a brand. And during that exercise of developing a brand, you know, they introduced our concept of our values and really the importance of digesting our vision down into words. And look, when Papercut started, we didn't sit down and write a business plan and a vision. It's just inherent. But as a business scale, it gets to a point where you do need to codify it because it needs to be communicated across so many people. And they helped extract a little bit of the agency working with around brand help us really extract a little bit of what I call the essence of Papercut, our core values of caring, honest, nimble and intelligence. And really also through that process helped extract a little bit about why we exist as an organisation and what our vision should be. And really for us, it's to be admired and disruptive, not the biggest and the best, but to really... we measure our success by the impact we're having and the passion that we have, and we prefer to go and do the harder stuff, you know, to be disruptive. And we get our admiration not by our quarterly sales figures, but by being admired by our customer base. You know, those emails we get, the posts on Reddit, that's what keeps us motivated. And that's what you... When you go to our global town hall meetings, that's what's highlighted and that's what people are passionate about. And I think it's a fantastic vision.
So coming back into the product, we know everyone probably knows Papercut MF, Papercut NG, but they weren't the first products that came out of Papercut. Was it Papercut Quota? Was that the first thing?
Originally the first thing was called just Papercut, and then we introduced a version for business, and that's where I probably made my first $1 million mistake, which was product naming. So we had Papercut. When we went into more targeting more the larger business, we came out with a product called Papercut Enterprise and thought we'll rename the Papercut at the time to Papercut Standard because that seemed to be what all software companies were doing in those early 2000s. And the problem is that caused confusion because, of course, all the schools had come along. Oh, I want to run the enterprise version. It sounds so much cooler. And then they look at the feature set and look at the price point. Oh, that's not what we want to run, and get confused. So we fixed that problem pretty quick by renaming, and we went for PaperCut Quota and PaperCut Chargeback. And those were, yeah, based on that first original code base, which, believe it or not, was written in Visual Basic 21 years ago. And yeah, had a good life. And then we rewrote that code base in a cross-platform way in modern languages back in, I think we started in 2005.
And then what I always find amazing is there's still customers out there who run Quota.
Yeah, and I do remember it was probably about 5 years ago, someone got in touch and wanted to upgrade to, I think at the time, PaperCut version 12, and they were running version 1. And I didn't think it was real, so I actually got on the phone to him, and he was a German customer. He spoke really good English, and he said that, yeah, no, this program's amazing. And he upgraded to 12, and he goes, I'm blown away by what it does today. What it used to do was awesome, and what it does today is fantastic. And then he emailed me 24 hours later and said, by the way, I was thinking last night about this program, what it's done for us, and I've written this poem. And he'd written a poem in English, and it was amazing, and we shared it across the company. But just to see that passion that people have had for, even version one of PaperCut, the impact that's had, it's been awesome.
So you had Quota and Chargeback quite happily bubbling along, but then you made the decision when you went to NG to go right back to the start and start with a code one, line one rewrite.
Yeah, and I suppose this is one of the elements that was pulled out in that vision, which is we're prepared to do those disruptive things. We're willing to take a step back and think about the way we do things and do it radically different if we need to. And rewriting from line one back in 2005 when we started that was a monumental undertaking, but we knew it was required. We couldn't take the existing code base and get the Linux Mac support as a first-class citizen. We knew we had to do it from scratch. So, yeah, we embarked on that journey.
And I also think one of the other things you chose to do was go web-based.
Yeah, so at that time we thought if we're going to do it, we want to take on the latest tech and try and innovate. And going web browser-based administration was a bit of a radical call back in 2005. You sort of started to see that coming out in some routers, have a web-based administration. And we thought we're going to do that. And I think the interface that we produced back in 2005 was awesome. And I do remember a post on, I think it was Ars Technica, and one of the administrators jumped in and they were talking about web-based administration. Is web-based administration versus desktop application administration, what's the future going to be? And I remember someone jumping in and said, web-based, you know, these other programs that people are talking out are awful interfaces, but check out PaperCut. That shows me that web is the way to go. And it was awesome to see in just a general tech that we made the right call. And in fact, we'll appreciate it for making that call, and we're seen as a company out there innovating.
And it's paid off because it's really stood the test of time.
Yeah, and it very much so. And I think, when you look at the new work we're doing in the cloud and the new product we've put out, PaperCut Pocket, and the products that we're following off that platform, we continue to innovate. So we've got some amazing technologies that's coming, and that's something I'm passionate about, is just always looking for ways to innovate.
And as we start working or have been working on that cloud-based technology, do you think, is there any events from the past that are helping you prepare for that move to cloud?
Yeah, a transition to cloud is a difficult journey to go on, because it's not just about rewriting your technology. You've got to have those cultural changes with it. It was the same when we rewrote to become cross-platform. It required a culture change to move off the Windows mindset into a pure cross-platform world, and natively embrace Linux, natively embrace Mac. It was a culture divide at the time. And I think the same with cloud. I think to go into cloud and do it properly, you have to be willing to think about things radically different, whether it be the way you approach security and privacy, to the way you approach scalability and customer support. So I suppose that's one of the lessons learned, is that it's not just a technology game. It's actually a mindset and culture game.
Now, I'm going to try and remember a quote here that you've said several times, but correct me if I'm wrong. But I think you say we're one of the most exciting companies in the most boring part of IT. Is that the...
Yeah, that is. I often pull that. I probably don't use that too much amongst all the printer geeks out there. But yeah, I often say to new employees, we like to be the most exciting company in the most boring part of IT. Yeah. And ultimately, the most boring part is printing. And why? Because it should be boring. It should just work. And you know, I think I remember saying that probably a decade ago, and we've tried to live that through our office environment, our culture, etc.
So I think I speak to a lot of customers on the phone and also colleagues here at Papercut who are really interested and excited about Papercut. But aside from making great, aside from making great products, how do you get people excited about print management?
Yeah, I think really printing as a whole is, if you look from a system administrator or a network management perspective, it takes a disproportionate amount of mind share. And, you know, it's really, the printer is one of the few bits of IT that regularly has reliability problems, because it's fundamentally not an electronic, but it's a physical solution. It's also probably, the printer is the only bit of IT equipment we still get a person out with a screwdriver to help us fix, and we've got to get in and hands on and do paper jams and things like that. So it takes a disproportionate amount of our IT resources, and I suppose streamlining that, making it easier, making it more efficient is motivating, and that's what makes it exciting. It's putting in Papercut and actually interfacing with the real world and having real world tangible benefits. That's exciting. The other thing I say, there's a lot of software out there that just does things. Maybe it helps out with a little bit of time and enables things, but Papercut, really, you physically do something. You see that paper reduction, you know, and that's exciting. You know, when it back linking back to the physical world and actually making tangible changes that make a difference.
So, looking forward to the near future of Papercut, is there anything in particular that you're really excited about?
There's a lot of exciting things for us, I suppose. As an organization, the work that we've done in cloud, in some of the new product releases, and also a lot of the cloud work we've done, what I'd term hybrid cloud in Papercut NG, whether that be scan to cloud or OCR in the cloud, integration with cloud directory services, those sort of things. You know, that we're in a period of print management where innovation is occurring. You know, it's super exciting, and for me, I think anytime there's a technology point of inflection, like web browser administration, like MFDs allowing, you know, software to run at a firmware level, you really have innovation. And there's no doubt that the transition to cloud for print management is a period of innovation, and that's exciting, because that's in our DNA. That's what we're passionate about.
So as we come towards the end, I'm going to switch it up and just talk. I know there's been a massive amount in the news recently about the fires in Australia. And I want to cross back to Doc, because Doc had a question actually that he wanted to ask you around that. Just for people that don't know, Doc Balci, he works at ACDI. He does a lot of their audio content. So if you want to check him out in a bit more, you can check out his podcast, What's the Solution, which you can find on all your favorite podcast platforms. But we'll just jump in now and just hear his other question.
I would also like to ask about the status of the massive fires in Australia. While tragic throughout the continent, were any paper cutters seriously affected? And do you recommend any specific agencies for us to contribute to the relief?
Yeah, it's a great question and very, very topical. So, yeah, there's no doubt. I think the world has seen the fires that have occurred. And, you know, for me, it's just a reminder of, you know, the effect that climate has and the importance of the environment. And, yeah, so, you know, specifically on the questions, how's it affected us? So, you know, there's some obvious things. We have our office in Melbourne. We have spectacular views of the city. You couldn't see it for weeks. The city was just covered in smoke. I remember one day in particular, you couldn't see, you know, beyond 200 metres. It was like a big pea soup fog, and that was just smoke coming in. And it has really brought it, even though we're in the city and fire doesn't affect us that, you know, we're surrounded by a concrete jungle. It was, you know, getting a car for an hour and you get to a fire area, and the lives that was affecting and the impact it was having was incredible. Did it affect anyone at Papercut? Yeah, for many of us, we know people who have lost their properties. And in fact, the chair of our board owned a property who fire went through and lost everything. So we would all know someone that's affected by those fires. And there was a question about, you know, donations and who to make that, you know, and that's one of the reasons why we quickly, you know, put together an appeal to reach out to the community that we have to help raise funds. And so we had a link, we'll have a link on our website pointing through to the Red Cross, and we had a driver and well exceeded our target on that. And I think, you know, those sort of organisations have really looked for very effective ways to support the community through, you know, a major disaster like this. And it's great to see the donations that we've managed to help solicit of not being just from in our local region, but to see it flowing in globally for our partners and customers has been awesome. So I really appreciate the contributions that people have made so far.
So one final question to finish us up. Just before I do, just thank you so much for taking the time to sit down. I hope everyone has enjoyed the episode. I think one of the people we know listens into the podcast are people who maybe don't work for Papercut right now, but are thinking that Papercut might be the next step in their career or somewhere they want to explore. Is there one tip that you could give to anyone that maybe sees themselves as the next Papercutter?
Yeah, I think probably the number one tip that I would give people wanting to join Papercut or who are joining Papercut is come in and be yourself, right? It is a type of organisation. I very much tout something that we're flat through communication. Anyone can speak to anyone about anything. You know, we don't have politics and layers. We need some hierarchy and structure for scalability and decision making. But when it comes to communication, anyone should be able to talk to anyone about any topic. So being yourself and celebrating your views and who you are and your natural passion, just being a normal person, I think is the best way to succeed at Papercut. And, you know, so bring your views, come with passion and just live life with that attitude. It's a real big plus and it really helps us and our culture.
Well, once again, thank you so much for joining me, and for our listeners, I'll speak to you on the next one.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you're a new listener or you missed a previous podcast, then you can find all of our previous episodes on the Papercut blog. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook to make sure you're the first to hear when a new episode lands.